Hello and welcome to C2Y Podcast, Discussions on Child and Youth Care. My name is Wolfgang Vashel. Today I'm speaking with Sean Muir, the founder and executive director of the Healthy Aboriginal Network. The Healthy Aboriginal Network, or HAN, creates culturally appropriate, certified Aboriginal comic books. Each comic deals with a different topic that directly affects Aboriginal communities across Canada and, I suspect, many other countries as well. Hello, Sean, and thank you for speaking with me today.
Well, thanks for having me.
Pleasure. Aboriginal people in Canada face particular challenges, and these challenges are heightened when it comes to young people. I would like to start with a bit of a framework or contextualization. What are some of the particular challenges young Aboriginal people in Canada face?
Well, I think a lot of it, I think a lot of it stems from the residential school. Just not having parents or grandparents who have gone through the process of raising children, being raised by healthy parents. And so they kind of grow up differently. And I think that a lot of you struggle with that. So if you're just like anything else, if you're not modeled good behavior or proper parenting techniques as a child, the kids, you know, we come out a certain way, and I think you see that in health, you see that in education, and I think that's something that's going to take several generations to run through, several more generations. But I think it's getting better. You know, people, there's reconciliation is happening, and I think it's going to get better.
Yes, I certainly hope so. For those of listeners who don't know, the residential schools was a program by the Canadian government where they removed young Aboriginal people from their families and put them into what was euphemistically called schools. Often they were not schools at all, but work camps eliminate the Indian within or something along those lines?
Correct, yeah.
And so many, many young people removed from their families, and that legacy has gone on. How do we see that legacy playing out for young people today?
Well, unfortunately, I think sometimes, and I should just say I'm a bit of a pessimist, unfortunately, but I think sometimes it leads to fatigue when you're watching the news and there's all, you know, and the news never covers, you know, the happy stories, or rarely seems to cover good news stories. But there was this murder, there was this crime rate, and you know, they flash up an Aboriginal face. Well, you know, that gets to people, and I think that the government and organizations haven't done a good job of expressing why that happens or why that our community is in the health that it is. I think once people understand, you know, once the empathy is there, then I think things will get better.
And you see a lack of empathy from the general population in particular, and government and media in specifically?
Well, for instance, there was CBC had a terrific show on called Eighth Fire, and it was really well done. It was high production values and a lot of storytelling, really terrific show. But I think I think we were preaching to the converted already. I think that the general population doesn't have a lot of knowledge or interaction with First Nations and Aboriginal people.
Eighth Fire, for those who don't know, was a Canadian Broadcasting Corporation show, and actually much of it is online right now, so anyone who's interested can go to cbc.ca and then punch in Eighth Fire, and you can see videos, there's clips, there's interviews, and one of your artists from HAN is actually featured in that show.
Oh, yes, that's correct, yes, yeah.
It was quite amusing. I saw an interview with him, and as I'm watching the interview, I'm looking at the room he's in, and I'm thinking, I know that room. And I realized in your book, Level Up, it's the same room.
Yes, that's correct. Wow, good for you. Good memory. Good visual skills.
Yes. You talk about a lot of the images that we see are images of negativity or representation of negativity. And the Healthy Aboriginal Network and the comics, you certainly tackle particular issues, but you also tackle really positive aspects. And so, for example, you have one comic that addresses smoking called River Run. And rather than just focus on smoking, you talk about the power of tobacco. Could you talk to us a little bit about how you use culturally appropriate context to deal with some issues?
Well, for instance, you know, tobacco was a medicine, and it wasn't used sparingly. It was used in ceremony. It wasn't smoked the way it is now. So anyone who smokes cigarettes and says, "Well, this is our medicine," that's not correct. That's not the traditional use of it. We try to tell stories. We don't try to create brochures with pictures, and we try not to beat youth over the head about a particular behavior change. If you can tell a story, you have a much better chance of changing the way youth look at things. And I think if you ask any parent how many times their kids have watched Shrek or Toy Story or read their favorite book, typically they'll say, dozens or several times. And it's because they enjoy the content. Now, what we try to do is create good content that happens to also have a message to it. You know, we're trying to change behavior is by appealing to them. It's sort of, it's entertainment and information.
The stories are quite compelling, and I quite like that framing of it. We're trying to create stories, not brochures. What's been the response of young people who read your stories?
Well, we receive emails from teachers who say that they can't get, a couple of their kids to read novels, but they'll read our comic books and write a book report. Or parents who say, I can't get my kids to read anything, but they'll sit for hours in the room and read your book. So that's, it kind of makes it all worthwhile hearing those kind of stories. And how we even got started on comic books was, I guess it was 8 or 9 years ago, there was a fund that was out in Vancouver Coastal Health, and they were asking for innovative health promotion projects. I wanted to use video or TV, but there wasn't enough money. And so I remembered one day reading comic books as a kid with my buddies. And this one time, this kid read 2 and 3 books to my one, and I was a good reader. So I asked him, how do you read so fast? And he said, well, I don't. I look at the pictures, and they get the gist of what's going on. So I kind of, on more than a lark than anything else, bid this project. We were going to change behavior with youth and connect with youth with comic books. And it got funded. So then I went to the province, because I'd in contacts with them, and they'd said, well, we want to do suicide prevention. And then I went to the feds, Health Canada, and because we'd also talked, and they said, well, we want to do diabetes prevention. So in the span of a very short period of time, we got all 3 books funded without having anything to do, no story, no writers, no illustrators. And so we really had to work hard those first couple of years to find First Nations writers and Aboriginal writers and still struggle to this day with finding First Nations illustrators. Anyone who's any good is busy. And I always thought, would there be a deluge of emails and phone calls from people who said, here's my art. I want to be a comic book illustrator. Who doesn't want to be a comic book illustrator? But yeah, it hasn't happened. And I think because we've always kind of set the bar quite high. And I think people are shy, to get their work out there. Just like anything else in our community, we lack capacity. But hopefully that's going to change.
And the comics really are quite beautiful. So all of your comics are illustrated, the stories are created by Aboriginal artists?
The writers are all First Nations and or Aboriginal, mostly First Nations. I think on 2 of our books, they were Indigenous. So of Indigenous descent, and I think from Mexico and another fellow from Spain. And again, it's hard to find that, to find those First Nations illustrators. There's a comic convention down in Phoenix, I understand, and there's a bunch of guys down there. The important part, I think, is the content itself. The writing is the most critical part.
And let's go to the writing. So you the first few were, the topics were because of where the funding was coming from, suicide, diabetes. And now you've broadened it, so you do a variety of topics. How do you choose which topics to focus on?
Well, it's still very much reliant on funding. Yeah, there's a lot of topics. There's topics, I think I'd like to, cover HIV or bullying, violence in families. There's a lot of really important topics out there that we can't cover just because there's the funding cycles. This isn't funding for a lot of issues. So it's still very much funder-driven, unfortunately. We are a social enterprise. When a funder orders a book, there's an automatic 10,000 copies as a part of it, and then we always print extras and sell them afterwards. And so it has helped our sustainability, because we've been at this, I guess this is our 8th year, but we're not fully independent yet where we can, you know, go out and self-fund our own topics. The whole idea of HAN was to put as many books as possible, you know, sell the books as cheaply as possible, to put them in as many youth hands as possible. If you want to buy this, someone wants to buy them off the website, they're $5. You buy in a comic store, they're $5. Well, we'll ship it to you for $5. But if a funder or someone orders more, then they start going down to, you know, $4 and $3.50. If they buy 10,000, you know, it's $2.50. So we've taken the profit out of it in a lot of cases. I'd rather have it that way. I mean, the idea is to get as many out as possible. We've sold over 400,000 books the last, 7 years. And so I think we've achieved a fair level of success.
Yes, that's amazing. 400,000 books. That's incredible. Once you have the stories, you then put them out there for critique from young people. How does that process work?
Well, in the first book, suicide prevention book, we had, I always kind of knew we had to get it in front of youth and health professionals. And so we had a 20-page manuscript thing, single-spaced. And so we asked youth and health professionals to, you know, to read it and tell us what they think. Well, no one wanted to read that. No one wanted to take the time. And again, so I knew we had to get something out visually. I had a friend who was a filmmaker. And he said, well, here, and we had a storyboard. And he said, well, let me see what I can do. And he made what's called is an animatic. We had the author tell the story in his own words, and then he took the static images, the storyboards, and he imported them into a movie editing program and created this little animated short. Now, the beautiful thing about that is that it's reasonably cheap to do and quick, and then we test these videos on YouTube and in person with youth, and then so youth get the feeling of the story, they can see what the faces look like, what the positioning is, and then if they want changes, and invariably they do, it's easy and cheap to make at that point, as opposed to doing a whole book in color and then testing it when it's expensive and time-consuming to change.
And why is the input of youth important to HAN?
We need to get it right. You know, someone is... government has spent a significant amount of dollars to fund one of these projects, and we need to make sure that it's actually going to work. And we need to do justice to youth. I think a lot of times people don't give youth the respect that they deserve, that they actually know what's good for them. Sometimes, you know, decision making is in the crux of the moment is a challenge. But I think in a lot of cases, youth know the difference between, you know, right and wrong, or what is good behavior, what is not. They need to be involved in the process, for sure. If there's no uptake in the community with the books, then we haven't done our job.
And certainly the fact that 400,000 have gone out and young people who never read are sitting avidly reading them, it's working.
Yeah.
A lot of the stories deal with challenges. However, they will often circle back to Aboriginal culture. So gambling, diabetes, gang violence, you bring in specific, unique aspects of Aboriginal culture into the story. Can you talk a bit about how culture is used to deal with these issues?
Well, you know, it's difficult because we had a First Nations character in our first book, Wisakachak and Witigo, and it was our author Steve's. It was his interpretation of the characters. And we did another story for our first book, again, where a youth made an interpretation on a legend. When we focus group test them, some elders would say, well, you know, that's not the way it really was. That's not the historical interpretation of the character. And so then you're stuck in this place between wanting to give the youth the ability to keep the legends alive and the freedom to tell their stories, but you don't want to offend anyone. And so we have brought in certain elements of, you know, our First Nations culture, but I'm always a little bit leery about bringing in too much just for that very reason. We certainly don't want to offend. And the funders certainly don't want to offend.
Yes, yes. The last thing you want is to alienate people.
Yeah, so we have to be careful, and that's part of the whole focus group testing process. We can always make a change.
Right. I quite like your logo, culturally appropriate certified Aboriginal. It speaks volumes.
We use it intermittently. We haven't used it a whole lot. I like it as well, and we've changed it a couple times. We sort of just played around with it. And there were some organizations who wanted to use it sort of as a rubber stamp on their own publications. Yeah, we were thinking we were going to take it a lot farther than we have, but it's just sort of me in the office and the artists, you know, doing their work off the side of their desk. So we haven't exploited it, and I mean in a good way, right. But who knows?
Yeah, I think there's certainly opportunities there. According to Health Canada, Aboriginal people are more likely to get type 2 diabetes than other Canadians, and then younger Aboriginal people are developing type 2 diabetes more than ever before. My understanding is that diabetes was not always a health issue for Aboriginal people, and that the change in lifestyle contributed to diabetes. You have a whole book dedicated to diabetes. Could you share with us a little bit about how change in culture has contributed to diabetes?
Well, I think all of our, whether it's the European descent culture or First Nations culture, we've all undergone a change. So that we're not hunting, we're not going after our food, we're not gardening, nearly as much as we used to. So we're going to a store. So I think that's part of it, is certainly a lack of exercise. And then I think that poverty is a big challenge in communities. I got started in this with changing behaviors in youth because I went to a conference, and this is actually an Aboriginal agriculture conference back in 2004 in Manitoba. And they had Aboriginal ranchers and farmers who stood up and said, we can't sell our beef into the States. And when we go to the auction, we're getting pennies on the dollar for our meat. And then they had chiefs in these First Nations fly-in communities in northern Manitoba who were saying, milk is $20 for a 4-liter, and an orange is $5, and a red pepper is $8. And we were all aghast and said, well, how do you afford that? And the chiefs would say, well, we can't. And we said, well, what's cheap in your community? And, they said, pop and chips. And part of the reason for that is because, some of the band stores, and they're owned by the band, and other stores are not. They're owned by other ventures. I'm afraid I can't say the name of the company. And so they use the money, or the stores use as a profit center. And as soon as you put profit into food and make it so that you can't afford it, well, then people will buy whatever's cheap or whatever sort of tastes good. And I talked to some companies, some airline companies in Winnipeg, and so when they were flying food into these communities, when they needed weight, they would put in pop. And when they had the weight, but they needed volume, they would put in chips. So that's the second problem, is people will eat whatever's affordable, and companies will invariably sell whatever has the largest profit margin, because that stuff is cheap to buy and you can sell it for more. And the other problem is just education, which is teaching people that giving Coke to your baby in a baby bottle is not a good idea. Part of growing up healthy is feeding your baby right and getting nutrition to your baby's brain. And I think, Health Canada's come a long way with educating, Success by Six and Head Start programs. And so, again, although there's been setbacks, I think that it's going to get better through education. Key.
It is key. I had no idea when you talk about balancing the plane with pop or filling up the volume with chips. Again, without naming any companies, of course, why would they not fill it up with milk or meat?
Yeah, good question. I just think that there aren't the same margins. I think a lot of it is margin-based, and it's about making money. Why couldn't they? Why couldn't you? Of course you could.
Right. The comics, in the first book, you talk about using cultural stories, and in the story about diabetes, there's a very, very powerful, evocative image that includes ghosts and feeding on rotten meat as the analogy. What was the response from readers around those images in the comic?
Well, of course, they're very entertaining. And so youth generally really appreciate the books. There was someone who had said to me, he sent me an email and says, I really don't like your comic books. I think they're really dark, and scary. And then a couple of years later, I got an email back from the same guy who said, my nephew, I think it was his grandson, actually. My grandson really went through a hard time, was struggling with depression, and but you know what he said? He said, your suicide prevention book really helped him out, and so I've changed my mind about your books. That I don't think they're dark, and I still think they're dark and scary, but I think it's okay for the target audience. And that happens a lot. We get people who call and say, wow, and you know, that's for those same reasons. Again, if you're in your 40s and your 50s, you're not the target audience. You know, this is for teenagers. And we get health people who say, like, I go to a health fair and I bring 200 books and I put them out on the table and I turn my head and they're gone. And that's probably, you know, that's one of the biggest compliments we could ever get, is that they just don't, if you don't nail them down, they disappear. And I think it's, you know, it's because I think a lot of the youth know that they're by us, they're for us.
Yeah, yeah.
That the stories are relatable. And that's really why the First Nations, you know, are the Aboriginal writing is so important, less so for the illustration, I think. But it's the story's got to be relatable.
Mm-hmm.
And I think our writers do an exceptional job of that, of getting down to something that where anyone can go and say, okay, if that hasn't happened to me, I at least know someone who that has happened to.
One of your stories, actually called Just a Story, deals with seeing a therapist, and it's a brother and sister, and the sister goes to see a therapist around anxiety, and her younger brother goes to see a therapist around anger issues and fighting. In this story, the only time the parents are discussed is at the very end, when the sister says, you know, I hope my parents will go and get counseling. However, the young girl writes a story about an ogre and a witch who are constantly fighting, who fill in for the young girl's parents. I was struck by the absence of the parents and how it was these two young children by themselves reaching out, displaying resiliency, agency, knowing there's an issue, going and finding the support. Why did you leave the parents out of that story?
Oh, well, I actually didn't. I mean, it was Steve who wrote and illustrated, but I mean, we supported it because it was a different, that was our first book that had a younger target audience, so 8 to 12-year-olds, and I think he just wanted to center on the kids, wanted to make it relatable, and didn't want too much other outside influences. You read a lot of kids' books, they're very simple, they're very direct. You can't add a lot of characters because then it becomes a little bit confusing. And I think he did a fabulous job with that story. When we did the focus group testing, before I showed it to anyone, I sat down with the funder. And the funder was the Ministry of Child and Family Development here in BC. And when I finished showing her the video, she started to cry. And she'd said that, she sees that story time and time again in communities. And it really struck her. And although, I mean, of course, it's never, you know, happy to see someone be upset or crying, but inside I was clapping and jumping up and down, because, I mean, what an amazing, you know, response, you know, to have that. And that's really what you want, is that, you know, to have an emotional response, whether it's sad or anger or, you know, gaiety or whatever it is, to have an emotional response like that, I think, was very powerful. So I was very happy with that. That book is actually going to be evaluated by the Mental Health Commission of Canada this summer. So we're looking forward to those findings.
Oh, congratulations. It's an excellent story. As I was reading it, I was thinking about the residential schools and the absence of parents.
Mm.
I just want to touch on a couple more stories before we wrap up. Kiss Me Deadly is about STIs, sexual health. In some ways, it was the story that I thought might be the most provocative or difficult for young people to read, because you challenge internet pornography and you have a gay character and you address issues of two-spiritedness, and the couple who are together are, you know, so communicative and supportive of all the diversity in the community. What was the response from people with that book?
Yeah, that was funded by the government of the Northwest Territories, and it was tested extensively throughout the population and online. And yeah, the feedback was good. It was funny, actually, because I think we did 10 tests in 2 or 3 days in Yellowknife, and we found the same thing in every class, which was typically when we show videos, it's the girls or the women who are the most vocal. And so you always say, well, they're more mature, they have stronger communication skills. But when we were testing this sexual health book, it was guys who were like yelling out the answers and like clamoring over each other to share their knowledge and give feedback. And the girls and the women were, and this is high school, they were quiet. And even when we split them up, we had all boys. Okay, it was the boys still over, jumping over each other. The girls very, very quiet together. It was all the same until we got into a small group. Well, no, even then in a small group it was similar. And so we didn't test it at that point, but what we thought was happening was the boys were all anxious to seem like they knew a lot about sex. Therefore, they were having sex, and the girls, they didn't want to seem at all like they knew anything, lest, rumors get out, oh, well, she knows all about this and that, and therefore, she's having sex. So that was a very interesting thing about that project. The other thing about the comic book is that book has more information than a lot of our other books. It's less story-driven, I find, and has a lot of information in it, which is great and terrific, but if you read all 13 books, one after the other, I think you'd pick that one out as being a little more fact-heavy than the other ones, but still a terrific book, no question.
Yeah, it's a great book, and I found the drawings in that book particularly evocative. It was a different artist than Steve, and it just had a really different feel to it, and so I thought it was a great book as well, certainly. There's several other books that we are not going to have a chance to talk about: FASD, Youth in Care, Maternal Health. You also have a YouTube channel where you show various comics in the animatic form. I actually use one of your comics in a class that I teach around interviewing and counseling, and we talk about using confrontation. And I use the gang exit comic and the counselor who very quickly challenges the young person who doesn't want to speak. And so we talk about how do you use your own experiences in a counseling session, when is it appropriate, when is it not appropriate. But it's a very different way to view the comics, and one that I find very engaging. And I've referred your comics to many, many people, and the feedback has been great.
Yeah, great, thanks so much.
You're welcome. I encourage people to go to the Healthy Aboriginal Network. It's thehealthyaboriginal.net. Several of your comics are left on cliffhangers, so people can order them for the low, low price of $5, as you said. Support Han. It's well, well worth it. Is there anything else you would like to say before we wrap up, Sean? Anything that I missed?
Oh, there's a ton of stuff. people can contact me by email at sean@thehealthyaboriginal.net, and always happy to share our successes and hopefully less failures, but more successes, yeah, I think.
Yes, and...
Oh, one last thing, is that we have had two successful evaluations, one on the sexual health book and one on the gang book that you'd mentioned, funded by Justice Canada. And so, things are... We've got a bit more evidence now to back up our theory that this is a good way to impart information to youth. So, yeah, things are going well.
And what were they looking for in the evaluation?
They were looking to see what youth, what information youth picked up from it, from the stories, mostly it was a lot about the process of us focus group testing, with the animatics and how that engaged youth. So they both came out very positive.
It's great to see people using art to engage youth and to go beyond the brochure with pictures, to go beyond the didactic. They are very engaging stories. I highly encourage everyone to check them out. Sean, thank you for taking the time.
Yes, my pleasure. Thanks so much.
You're very welcome.